Good morning. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Goodbye to that humidity, huh? Doesn't it feel great out there today? My name is Greg Sand, and I'm this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life today. Please take the order of service home and read the announcements that are listed in it. In addition, I have a couple of extras. Well, more than a couple. Let's see. Morgan's note. Now that we're all gearing up for fall, I want to let you know the treble choir is going to start. On Sunday mornings, treble choir is open to anyone age 9 and up. We sing easy to intermediate two-part songs and usually perform once or twice a year. No prior singing experience is necessary, only a desire to sing. If you or your child has any interest or any questions, please contact Morgan Moraine by email or by phone. So for today, for RE classes, children of all ages are invited to go outside for RE and learn about our garden for good. Barbara Hoel will talk to the children about how we came to have this garden here, what it is used for, how it works, and where the produce goes when it is harvested. The children will also have an opportunity to do some planting and harvesting. The kids leave for RE right after the offertory, by the way. Also, our high schoolers are doing a car wash today outside to raise money to replace a kayak that was stolen during the spring Fowler Lake cleanup. Spruce up the church next Sunday. Please, we need your help to spruce up the church. On Sunday, August 22nd, please come for an hour or more around 9 a.m. until noon next week on Sunday. Your help will be appreciated as we do a once-a-year cleaning of our church. If you have questions, please contact Carrie Duma. And lastly, Fall Chakra Workshop is being offered. The LCUC will be offering a three-part workshop on exploring the chakras through movement, sound, and meditation. On three Wednesdays in September and October, Elizabeth Lewis, who led the popular workshop on visual journaling at our retreat last year, will be leading this series also. She is a stress management consultant, artist, and wellness educator. There are descriptions and flyers on this class in the foyer. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. Oh, hi. Good morning, Kelly. Miles was a big help yesterday. He was Will handing us stuff up the line. A lot of fun. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. I'd be happy to talk with you also after the service as your church board rep. I'll be in the social hall. If you're visiting with children today, I know many of them are still doing car washes outside, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they can leave for RE. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe the child's class today, please do so, or the nursery is just out the doors to my right if that need arrives. We also enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you'd introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a great time to do that. Welcome. Welcome. Wow. Thank you. Hi, Lynn.
I'd like to introduce
Welcome, Stephanie. Thank you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion on the service. Please remember to put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service fulfilling. Our speaker today is Lori Lobin. The Reverend Lori Lobin is a charter member of LCUUC and was ordained by this congregation after being admitted to preliminary fellowship with the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association. She is currently a minister at large in search of a parish settlement.
The words for our call to worship this morning are from Griswold Williams. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve human need, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant with each other and with God. And for our chalice lighting, we gather this hour as people of faith, with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, a sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together. I invite you to remain seated and join in our sung chalice lighting response, which is printed in your order of service. Tom up to help me with the story for all ages. We have so few children here this morning. Why don't you just stay where you're seated, unless you really want to come up. But otherwise, you can just stay where you're seated. Come on up. Always a troublemaker. Our story for all ages this morning is a very old traditional folktale. If you are a parent, or indeed if you grew up as a child in this country, you have probably heard it before. But as with most folktales, it bears repeating. A girl once went to the fair to look for a job as a servant. She waited and waited and talked to a lot of people, and finally a funny-looking old gentleman hired her and took her to his house. And when they arrived there, he explained that before he gave her specific instructions about her duties, he needed to teach her his special names for all sorts of things in his house. And he said to her first,
"Funny-looking old gentleman, huh? Well, that won't do. What will you be calling me?"
"Why, Master or Mister or whatever you please, sir."
"Ugh! You must call me Master of all Masters. And what would you call this?"
"Why, I would call that a bed or a pallet or whatever you please, sir."
"No, no, that's my barnacle. Now, what do you call these?"
"Well, I guess I'd call them breeches or trousers or whatever you please, sir."
"Well, here you must call them squibs and crackers. And what would you call her?"
"Oh, why, kitten or cat or whatever you please, sir."
"You must call her White-Faced Simony."
"White-Faced Simony. Got it.
And this, what would you call that?"
"Well, I would call that fire or flame or whatever you please, sir."
"No, you must call it hot cockalorum." "And what would you call that?"
"Well, I would call it liquid or water or whatever you please, sir."
No. Pondalorum. "And what do you call all of this, this building we're in?"
"Well, I would call it a house or a cottage or whatever you please, sir."
"I think we'll be calling it High Topper Mountain."
And so the servant girl learned all of the things in her master's house, and for a time, everything went well. And then one night, the very frightened servant woke up her master crying,
"I think I need a new sleep number.
Master of all masters, get out of your barnacle and put on your squibs and crackers. White-faced Simony has got a spark of hot cockalorum on her tail, and unless you quickly get some pondalorum, all of High Topper Mountain will be all hot cockalorum."
Sweet Jesus, the cat's on fire.
And that is our story for all ages. If you ponder it, you will find a kernel of wisdom in it. And I invite you now to rise as you're willing and able and join in singing our first hymn. It's number 126, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing."
Now is the time for our offertory. If you are a visitor here, we do consider you a guest, and we ask that you not feel obligated to contribute today. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. We now invite you to share your joys and concerns, and if you do have a joy or concern you would like to share with us, please raise your hand and one of our ushers will bring a microphone around. State your name and briefly state your joy and concern, and I will light a candle to commemorate that. I'd like to begin by lighting our first candle in memory and commemoration of all the strife and struggles that have gone on in our world. And this is the time where the children are leaving for RE also.
I asked Kelly if I could light the first candle of joy or concern. I want to light a candle of joy. First, for this wonderful congregation that has supported me and been a home to me and my family and did me the honor of ordaining me this year, and I really appreciate that and I thank you. But a second joy that I have, many of you may not know Brenda Patterson. Brenda and John were two of our founding members, and they were here last weekend just to visit and left me a note. The gist of it is, the message that's for everybody, is that they are very proud of this congregation, and they remember looking at this building, which many of you know that we purchased just a few years ago, and they were just so thrilled to drive past and see Lake Country Unitarian Universalist signage and see the original banner. They came inside and the familiar things from, you know, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, I think it was, when we started this church. So they send their best regards and warmest wishes and a standing invitation to visit them in Jacksonville, Florida, to everyone in the church.
Candle of joy, Kristen and I celebrated our 17th wedding anniversary yesterday.
My name is Jerry, and I'd like to share a joy that over the last couple of weeks, 10 members and friends of this congregation devoted over 60 hours of work to replace all of the fluorescent lighting in the classrooms, the front foyer, the offices, and the restrooms with high-efficiency lighting. And almost the entire cost of that will be reimbursed by electric company We Energy as part of their energy storage program. So basically, we're going to be able to achieve a 30% reduction in our electric bills for the lighting portion. Really compliments of We Energies.
My name's Mike, and I got a couple of joys. One, Helen and I will be celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary this coming week. And then our second joy is for our daughter, Nicole, who's celebrating her 12th birthday today. So if you see her, wish her a happy birthday.
I'm Judy, and I just want to have a candle lit of joy and gratitude that just spent the last week and continuing celebration with a lot of my family here, of my brother who passed away, and yesterday And Lauren is his daughter, and she's here with us. And yesterday we were down in Chicago getting her brother situated to start law school at Northwestern. And then we took my brother's ashes and just kind of went all around the Chicago area to our favorite stomping areas and our old house, and we snuck into the ravine, and we just did a lot of spreading of joy. So, and Lauren only dropped her dad once. But we had, we just had a really wonderful time, and it's still continuing and very healing.
I'm Blake. I have a concern for our good friend who suffered a serious leg injury last week, and we hope that he has a successful recovery.
I'm Robin, and I want to thank with all my heart all the people who came and participated in the memorial for my son. It was just a wonderful outpouring of love, and I can't thank you more.
Good morning, I'm Barbara. I would like you to light a candle of concern for my oldest granddaughter, who seems to have an illness that children can't figure out. She has pains in all her joints and says she feels like she's in an 80-year-old body, and you can see it now in how she moves. Her hips are really bad. And she's also all of a sudden starting to gain weight, which absolutely no reason, and quite a bit of it in a short time.
I'm Yvonne. I actually would like two candles, if they're less right or not. The first is the great joy to have Stephanie with us. It's been a dream of ours for a long, long time to have an administrator, and I've spent some time with her, and she's a wonderful, warm person. So I hope you all take some time to get to know her, and it's a great joy to have her. The second is my husband's aunt passed away this summer, and so that's the third older person in just a few months, and we had a rummage sale last year. A household sale of some of my mom's things yesterday, this last weekend, and it was a real bonding experience for my brothers and myself. She was a saver. I mean, we relived our childhood and had to deal with the relationship with things. What do you keep? What do you throw away? What do you give away? What do you, you know, and it's been an interesting process to, with three households, to deal with stuff. So.
Hi, I'm John. Would you please light a candle of concern for my mother, who fell off of a curb on her way at a gas station when she was heading out west to Wyoming and broke both elbows, and so she can't do much for herself. She's in rehab right now, but your spirits are pretty good, but it's kind of going to be a tough recovery for her, so just candle concern. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Anita, and I just want to light a couple quick joys here. One is for the wonderful weather we're having today, and finally a break from the heat. So, I don't have air conditioning in my apartment, so it's absolutely wonderful to feel the cool weather right now. But the second one is I recently got an invitation to one of my elementary school friends' wedding. And I just want to light a joy for rekindling old friendships, getting together with my old high school friends, stuff like that. So it's just really nice to get together with some of my childhood friends.
Hi, my name is Lynn. I just want a candle of joy. We survived another move out of Madison. Both May and Richard moved out of their apartments. But really, you know, Rich lived with Jesse Mirsky Fuller, Tim's son, for the last 4 years. They bonded here at church, and they've been friends ever since, and lots of wonderful experiences. And as we went through their things yesterday, they were like, you know, they're all moving on, and they wanted to throw away a lot of things. I'm like, oh, the fan. Well, I think we could use that at church in one of the classrooms, and the big jar. Well, we'll have a fundraiser. We'll bring it to church, and the raffle tickets, and they created these T-shirts. We have 100 T-shirts that, anyway, you'll see their things around. But it was really a wonderful experience knowing that these boys will be friends forever.
I'll light one final candle for all the joys and concerns we choose to keep in our hearts, with the reminder that Reverend Jane is always available if you choose to share them with her.
Please join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, mystery of the known and unknown universe, we gather, proud and humble, knowing and unknowing, yet all elementally the same. We experience joy and sorrow, pleasure and pain, abundance and loss. We are human. Together we sustain one another and come together to heal our wounds, forgive our errors and ourselves, recognize our common humanity and our common destiny. For what befalls one affects all. And for this we give thanks. We lift up and hold in our hearts the joys and sorrows expressed this morning, as well as those expressed in the silence of our hearts and souls, in hopes that joy will be multiplied and sorrows lessened in the sharing. And let us now consider those things in a time of silence. Spirit of life and love, let our hearts be lightened and our spirits refreshed in the warmth of this caring community, that we may indeed rejoice and be glad in this day we are given. Blessed be, and amen. I invite you again to remain seated and join in our centering response, hymn number 8, as you are willing and able. Our first reading this Sunday is from the book of Judges in the Hebrew Scriptures. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the book of Judges, but it is arguably the most violent book in the Bible. The men of Ephraim were called to arms, and they crossed to Zaphon and said to Jephthah, "Why did you cross over to fight against the Ammonites and did not call us to go with you? We will burn your house down over you." But Jephthah said to them, "My people and I were engaged in conflict with the Ammonites, who oppressed us. But when I called you, you did not deliver me from their hand. Why then have you come up to me this day to fight against me?" Then Jephthah gathered all of the men of Gilead and fought with Ephraim, and the men of Gilead defeated Ephraim. Then the Gileadites took the fords of the Jordan River against the Ephraimites, and whenever one of the fugitives of Ephraim said, "Let me go over," the men of Gilead would challenge them and say, "Are you an Ephraimite?" And when he said no, they said to him, "Then say Shibboleth." And he said, "Sibboleth," for he could not pronounce it right. Did you hear that? Shibboleth, Sibboleth. Then they seized him and killed him at the fords of the Jordan, and 42,000 of the Ephraimites fell at that time. Our second reading is from the Reverend Nancy Schaefer. Because she wanted everyone to feel included in her prayer, she said right at the beginning several names for the holy. Spirit, she said, Holy One, Mystery, God. But then, thinking these weren't enough ways of addressing that which cannot be fully addressed, she added particularities, saying, Spirit of Life, Spirit of Love, Ancient Holy One, Gracious God, Spirit of this earth, God of Sarah, Gaia, Thou. And then, with her tongue loosened, she fell to naming superlatives as well. Most creative one, greatest source, closest hope. Even though superlatives for the sacred seemed to her probably redundant. But then she couldn't stop. One who made the stars, she said. Although she knew technically a number of those present didn't believe the stars had been made by anyone or anything, but just luckily happened. One who is an entire ocean of compassion, she said, and no one laughed. That which has been present since before the beginning, she said, and the room was silent. And then, although she hadn't imagined it this way, others began to offer names. Peace, said one. One my mother knew, said another. Ancestor, said a third. Breath, said someone near the back. Refuge, that which holds all. Then a child said, Water. And someone else said, Kuan Yin. Then witness, great kindness, eternal stillness. And then there wasn't any need to say the things she'd thought would be important to say. And everyone sat, hushed, until someone said Amen. And Amen. So what's in a word? You say tomato and I say tomato. You say potato and I say potato. Let's call the whole thing off. What's in a word? There's a small crustacean which is found, or at least used to be found, in many lakes in Wisconsin and elsewhere, but it's called by many names. And what you call it depends on where you're from. Some people call them crayfish. Some people call them crawfish. Others call them crawdads, and I've even heard them called mudbugs. And there may be more names that I don't know, but the crab-like creature is the same and tastes just as good as good with melted butter wherever you eat it and whatever you call it. Or consider the word spelled C-R-E-E-K. It's like a river or a stream, and how do you pronounce it? I grew up across a road and a farm field from Turtle Creek. Turtle Creek. But today I say, let's go shopping at Johnson Creek. See, the way I speak started changing when one of my elementary school teachers said, oh, probably in about fourth grade, that saying crick made me sound like an uneducated hillbilly. As did saying wash for wash and chimbley for chimney. And that was a little painful to the self-esteem, although certainly nothing compared to what the men of Gilead did to the Ephraimites, who couldn't pronounce shibboleth. And in case you were wondering, shibboleth means ear of grain, although it has been translated as flowing stream. It appears 20 times in the Bible and entered the English language as a definition for password. What's the secret word? What's the password? In our history, we have had shibboleths. For example, the word Lollapalooza was used as a shibboleth to test people in the Pacific Theater during World War II, because it was believed that our enemies wouldn't be able to pronounce the word correctly. Another example from the same war in Europe was the practice of asking questions about American baseball, with the assumption that any true American would know who played first base for the Yankees in 1943. You all know, right? I looked it up. Nick Etten. Today, shibboleth can still mean password, but it is also defined as any peculiarity of pronunciation, behavior, mode of dress, and so forth that distinguishes a group of people. We can think of the Amish in their plain dress and their carriages. A catchword or a catchphrase that any group of people knows that may not be familiar to outsiders. Or a particular custom or practice that identifies someone as a member of a group. We are just full of shibboleths here in Unitarian Universalism, aren't we? About a year ago, I started thinking about this and talking with some of my colleagues and friends about shibboleths that they thought we Unitarian Universalists might have. And I have to admit that in the strictest sense of the word, we don't really have a secret password or a secret handshake, so don't worry. But one colleague maintains that she believes NPR, the abbreviation for National Public Radio, is our shibboleth. To quote her, NPR is our code word. If you ask, what is that? We kill you. Not literally, of course. But I think we do have ways of determining whether someone is or is not a Unitarian Universalist, one of us, whether we're conscious of them or not. Just consider these two admittedly extreme scenarios. Imagine you're a greeter and you see someone pull up to the front of this church in a Hummer and park in a handicap accessible spot, even though the car displays no handicap parking permit. Further, there's an Anwar Drill Baby Drill sticker on one side of the bumper and a Marriage Equals One Man, One Woman sticker on the other side. The driver walks in wearing a real fur coat with a button attached that says McCain Palin. Would you judge this person to be one of us or not? Now imagine you're a greeter and you see someone ride up to the church on a bicycle, which he carefully locks in the rack. He then walks in and you see he's wearing sandals made of recycled tires and hemp rope and carrying a reusable thermal mug for his after-service coffee, fair trade, of course, with a button on his all-natural organic cotton shirt that reads, "If it has a face, don't eat it." Would you judge this person to be one of us or not? Intentionally or not, we look and listen for cues, and I would bet that many in this congregation would be more likely to consider the second person to be more compatible than the first with the general ethos of Unitarian Universalism. Tain't necessarily so, folks. Trust me when I tell you that there are people in our congregations who actively avoid attending service during major political campaigns because they are politically conservative and just don't want to argue. Religious liberal doesn't always equal political liberal. And unfortunately, sometimes this extends to our younger folks. Our youth conferences are wonderful experiences for many, but I have heard from more than one youth or young adult about some youth being ignored at youth conferences because they looked, quote, too prep, too jock-like, or too normal, unquote. Are these fair judgments? Of course not. And as one of my children pointed out to me, it can be just as unfair and potentially offensive to say about someone that he or she, quote, is a Unitarian Universalist, but they just don't know it yet, unquote, based on something we perceive in them as being compatible with our faith and our values. And if you can't understand how that might be offensive, think of something that is the opposite of how you perceive yourself. For example, if you're a Democrat, think of someone telling you, oh, you're really a Republican, you just haven't realized it yet. But as I said, there is no secret password. But we do have some specific practices or customs that set us apart from other faith traditions. And this gets very interesting. Because there are very few religious symbols or other signs for what we are. But one common question is, why do you have a candle in the chalice? Those of you who grew up in traditions where communion wine or juice was drunk know that the chalice is what? A glass, a drinking cup, something like this. And it seems strange to many of our Christian cousins that we would set fire to the drinking cup. Unless they know the history of the Hussite movement in Eastern Europe and we tell them about the origin of our flaming chalice. And I have patiently explained the history of our flaming chalice many times over the past several years, having attended a Christian seminary. And once people understand how spiritually significant it is, they get it. They see that the flaming chalice is more than a weird practice. It's a talisman of sorts. It's something that changes the way we think of this time that we spend together. It is the symbol of a vital faith, a faith that does have deep roots in Christianity and hasn't forgotten its roots in Eastern Europe. And we are a people of faith, with spirits as alive and shining as our flame. And the only other two exclusively Unitarian Universalist practices that I can think of are the generally loved practices of water communion and flower communion. Now, flower communion is one of my favorite services of the year, because in addition to having religious meaning for me, it has a deep cultural meaning to my family. And I think it's important to have these practices as Unitarian Universalist rituals, but it does beg the question, would we ever celebrate bread and wine communion? Now, at this point, I can imagine comedian Jeff Foxworthy doing a whole routine. You might be a UU if you light the alcohol in the chalice instead of drinking it. Or you might be a UU if you look ahead while singing hymns to make sure you agree with the words. On the other hand, many of us identify ourselves as Unitarian Universalists by what we don't do. We don't require our members to tithe. We don't require adherence to a particular belief system. Most of us don't carry Bibles to church, and in some of our churches, you'd be hard-pressed to even find a Bible. Most of us don't dress up for church, and most of us don't watch a certain news station which shall remain nameless. On the other hand, there is some language that we think we have an exclusive right to, the term liberal religion or religious liberal. And some of us like to think we are the only religious liberals. But like many things, there is a spectrum of liberal religion. And debating the fine points brings us back to words again. What's in a word? We Unitarian Universalists have some odd practices, some shibboleths, you might say, concerning words. We tend to abbreviate a lot. One common abbreviation is RE. When I first walked into a Unitarian Universalist church, I didn't know what RE was. Well, it stands for religious education. And you know, I'm not sure why we use this term rather than Sunday school. And I've never gotten a good answer to that question. And I'm sure you can think of lots of other abbreviations, like UU itself, for example. I was once taken aside. This is a true story. I was once taken aside by a teacher at my children's school because she was concerned that one of our children had invented their own religion, yo-yoism. I confess that I had a fleeting urge in that moment to invent a cult that worshipped Tommy Smothers, the yo-yo man. But I was a responsible parent and patiently explained that what she was hearing, UUism, was an abbreviation for Unitarian Universalism. And she continued to stare blankly at me. So I went on to explain that Thomas Jefferson was, at least philosophically, a Unitarian, and Clara Barton was a Universalist, and our church was part of this heritage. A lot of people don't have a clue what a UU is, or even what a Unitarian Universalist is. On the other hand, my colleague Joanna Crawford, the one who thinks NPR is our shibboleth, our password, says that UU is a way of identifying yourself as safe where she lives. See, she's the only Unitarian Universalist attending an evangelical Christian seminary in the state of Texas. And she wrote to me that, quote, in the same way Huck Finn was outed as a boy when someone threw something at him and he caught it, a non-UU is outed as a liberal when they don't say, huh, what's that, about UUism. And she tells me that when she identifies herself as a UU or a Unitarian Universalist in her classes, she can visibly see her gay and lesbian classmates relax, knowing that they need not be constantly on their guard around her, and that this is a good thing. Now, some of our language practices are kind of funny, like doubling up on the U's in words. I'm going to get in trouble with Jerry for this. A good example is the Fruits and Nuts Sale. It's a fundraiser every spring, part from our Southeast Wisconsin Unitarian Universalist Council, and they spell fruit and nuts with two U's in each word. And I've even known some Unitarian Universalists who call themselves UU Buddhists, with two U's in Buddhist. But the language practices I find troubling are the ones around the words we get touchy about. And a couple of my colleagues have actually written sermons about the dirty words you can't say in church. These are words that some of us find difficult, often because of baggage from experiences with previous traditions we might have been raised in. And in the interest of full disclosure, I will confess, and there's one of those words, confess, that I've had trouble with some of these words myself, and still do. I have my own baggage to deal with. Some of the other words are prayer, sin, salvation, redemption, soul, sacrifice, sacred or holy, and this is by no means an exhaustive list. I'm sure you have your own. As Unitarian Universalists, some of us like to use substitute words. We don't pray, we meditate. Or instead of sermon, talk. Program instead of worship service. Community for church. Associate for liturgist. And any number of euphemisms for God or mystery. Now, sometimes there are carefully reasoned arguments for the substitutions. One friend of mine is, as he puts it, an upraised UU with an MA in religion, and he's active in a group called UUs for Jewish Awareness. And he argues that the use of the word church is difficult for some people who are in agreement with Unitarian Universalist faith, but really have a deep-seated cultural barrier to attending a church. And I can understand his argument. And I know, and probably many of you know, that many Unitarian Universalist places of worship are called by other names. Fellowship, society, parish, and congregation are the most common. But understanding our collective aversion to religious language is difficult, because religious language speaks out of the depths of human experience. And the meaning of the words can be as numerous as the number of people you ask for their definition. How do you know what your evangelical Christian neighbor means when they say God if you don't ask them? How do they know what you mean when you say the most sacred if they don't ask you? One prominent Unitarian Universalist minister preached on her humanist faith, and she wrote that she startled many in her congregation who thought she was a theist. She preached on being a humanist, and they were surprised because they all thought she was a theist. And why? Because she uses religious language. She uses the word God, and she uses the word prayer. For me, I've come to believe the first words of our call to worship. Love is the doctrine of this church. Loving one another and loving one's neighbor, after all, is one of the two greatest commandments. And in order to love fully, one risks vulnerability and pain, even the pain of using words we find uncomfortable. When I was on internship, I was active in interfaith groups. And you may know that a lot of interfaith work involves collective prayer. Representatives from different faith groups will often lead prayers at one gathering, each in her or his own way. Prayer was one of the words I have had real difficulty with over the years. But in order to function fully in those groups, I had to come to terms with religious language and find a way to express myself in it. Working within the heritage of our faith, I found ways to pray with integrity as a non-theist Unitarian Universalist. at interfaith gatherings, at worship services on Good Friday, and at vigil services for homicide victims. It is possible to reclaim the words many of us haven't wanted to hear in order to grow and more fully embrace our faith. I would say for some of us it is desirable to reconsider such words in order to grow into a deeper and more mature faith. And I believe it is essential to be able to use this language in order to engage in meaningful interfaith dialogue and understanding, a dialogue which I believe is the key to our survival as a planet. And so I leave you with some questions to ponder. What is the purpose of our faith? Is this solely a place to find comfort and affirmation? Or is it a place to challenge and be challenged and do the work of developing a mature spirituality? Are we serious about love being the doctrine of this church? Are we serious about interfaith dialogue and understanding? Only we hold the answers. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join in our closing hymn. It's number 168, One More Step. This church and some of our other congregations, the minister doesn't get the last word. We call it polylog. It is still a time of worship and sacred space. It is a time for respectful and thoughtful reflection on the message of the day. And if you would care to participate, please raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring a microphone to you. I ask that you say your name and be brief, and we'll just take, we'll just have time for a few responses this morning. It's quite warm, and I'm sure we all want to get to the lemonade.
My name is Chris. Lori, do you know why we are, the title of our group is Church, LCUUC, why Church was chosen? As opposed to society or fellowship,
No. That's an easy answer. It's in the bylaws, though. And, in Madison, all three churches are not called churches. There's First Unitarian Society, there's James Reeb Congregation, and there's Prairie Society. And in this area, with the exception of the downtown First Unitarian Society in Milwaukee, Unitarian Church North in Mequon, West in Brookfield, us, and Mequonago are all, well, no, Mequonago actually is a society too, United Unitarian and Universalist Society of Mequonago.
Hi, I'm John, and had a couple of comments. First, thanks for talking about all these words and stuff. It's always very interesting. One of the words that seemed a little strange to me, or the abbreviations, I should say, is in the Unitarians have a tradition of going, the youth conference is not ever a conference, it's the youth con. And in my mind, con is similar to scam. And so, you know, when there's an announcement about the youth con, it uses the word con in all kinds of different places in there, and I'm kind of going, ooh, I don't know, this just seems kind of strange. So, I know what it is, but it for somebody who didn't really know, what are they wondering about this youth con thing, and we're going to teach all our kids to be cons or something. Which, I know, it's just funny. But the other thing I was going to say is, as we inevitably put people in boxes, as I think about religious traditions or religious groups, if you have somebody who's politically conservative and perhaps an atheist, and you ask yourself, I mean, most Unitarian Universalists are politically liberal, but where would a person like that go? I mean, I can't think of any religion besides our own that would accept a politically conservative atheist. And so, and we have them in our midst. And, mm-hmm. you know, I hope that we don't try to box people up too much so that we can't consider and accept their views, because really, I think they belong here as much as anywhere.
Thank you. I agree. And yeah, but your point about youth cons is well taken. And con is also the opposite of pro. So, but I will say, when I was in Racine, it was during the last presidential election, and there were people in the congregation that I didn't meet until after the election.
Good morning. My name's Will. Whenever I refer to this building that we come to with my friends, I call it Hippie Church, much to the chagrin of my partner, Kelly. But for me, it truly feels that way, because I actually admire the values of openness and love and taking care of one another. And so when I say Hippie Church to my friends and they kind of giggle, and I'm like, yeah, but it works for me.
I'm Yvonne, and I was here when we started, and so if we wait long enough, no one will know why. But my response to why we called this a church is that we don't want to be the wilderness society. We are a religion. We want to address the big issues that one faces in life, and it's not how green can we be just, but how do we approach life, death, birth, forgiveness, and love, and all of those words. And so it really is... You know, that's why. And so the people that started it had that intention, and that's why we rented church space rather than meeting in a gymnasium, and we wanted ministers instead of just lay speakers, strictly. So that was the intention of why we called it a church in the beginning. And I just wanted to say, many years ago, I taught RE, and the curriculum was addressing those words. And so early on, I had to face and teach young children about those words, the words that that one struggles with. And it was a very useful exercise. But in the end, we're talking about defining words, and people, I'm convinced, come back to emotions rather than definitions of words. I mean, your emotion behind the word love, even, or any of the words, it's not always easily just put defined and there it is, black and white. It's bigger than that.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry, and I have two things. One is a response to John's question, before Esther and I moved back to Wisconsin, we lived in northern Illinois, and we belonged to the Countryside Church in Palatine. And there the leadership of the church was very politically conservative, but theologically very liberal. So the two are not incompatible. Now, the second thing is a question for you, Lori. When you lead the prayer before ecumenical groups, who do you pray to?
I kind of do what, the reading from Reverend Nancy Schaefer, a couple of different things. I usually say something like, Spirit of life, gracious God we know by many names. That's how I usually start.
Okay. I'm Mike. You bring up dialogue as it's a great thing, but in my walks of life and interactions with other people, particularly with ultra-conservatives, they always assume you know what they mean by God or whatever their definition is. And my definition of liberal is I'm able to be flexible and open to new ideas. So how do we carry on a dialogue with somebody that, you know, if we don't agree with their exact definitions of what, you know, whatever the term is, you can't have a meaningful dialogue with them?
I'm not sure that's true. And my colleague, the Reverend Craig Schwallenberg, and I did a dialogue sermon once called On Faithful Conversations, and it was on the question of evil. And that's another one of those words that a lot of Unitarian Universalists don't even want to engage the question of whether evil exists, good and evil. And of course, you know, in our sermon, we both came to the conclusion very quickly that we both agreed that evil existed, but how did we define it? And that was the interesting part. He had his way of defining it and dealing with it, and I had a different way of defining it and dealing with it. And we showed the congregation how we did that. I mean, it took some work putting this together. And how, well, okay, I may not totally agree with you, but I can see where you're coming from. I think we can have meaningful dialogue even if we don't completely agree on the definitions. Sometimes we might even say, well, until you can consider my point of view, maybe we can't have a meaningful dialogue. But the point is that the onus is on both parts, both persons in the dialogue, to be open. You know, I went to school with people who ranged from very liberal Christians to fairly conservative Christians. And one of my proudest moments in seminary was when I said something in a theology class, and my very conservative friend Brian, who was sitting behind me, said, "You made sense." I wish I could remember what I'd said.
My name is Linda. I recently heard a sermon very similar to yours, locally, in fact. You've taken it one step further, though, and I really appreciated your talking about making peace with these foreign words. Mm-hmm. And trying to, I think it's our responsibility, as you use, to try to bridge that gap. It's just more part of our culture, trying to figure out a definition for ourselves and communicate with someone else what their definition is. The talk that I heard simply identified the words and, you know, people added to the pile, but there wasn't anything any further. You know, you walked away with, so there's this schism. Mm-hmm. How do we broach that? And I appreciated your talking about that.
Thank you, and I appreciate you using the word bridge. A bridge has been a very useful metaphor and image for me over and over. One useful way that I have found to bridge is an old curriculum. It was written back in the 70s, the 1970s, called The Haunting Church, Owning Your Religious Past. It's for adults. And I have facilitated this curriculum with small groups. And it's very interesting to walk with people through thinking about the spaces that they grew up in to worship, houses of worship, and the words that were used, and how they feel about them now and how they would define them now. It's very interesting and very rewarding, and I think it really helps people come to peace and move on. I think we have time for about one more, because it's getting warm up here.
Hi.
Me.
My name's Bob Evans.
Oh, two more. Okay, whoever's got the microphone right now.
Okay. I was raised Roman Catholic with all of that symbolism, and later in life I became a lifetime Mason, and I happen to be Scottish Rite, but the Sibboleth is very well used in the Masonic tradition, and the definition is a sheaf of wheat hanging by a water ford. So your explanation of it, kind of like, I went, wow, okay. So that's where it came from. It came from the Old Testament. Thank you.
Thank you. And one more.
I'm Angel.
Hi, Angela.
Just wanted to say something about the word prayer. Samantha and I have had lengthy conversations since her accident about the word prayer, because so many people were praying for her. And I think it just translates into energy. And, you know, everybody sending that energy to her really did help. So prayer is a positive word, the way I see it. If I'm around people who prefer the word prayer, I use that. If I'm around people who prefer the word energy, sending energy, I'll use that. I think that it's all one and the same. And as long as it's a positive word, and nobody prays for bad things unless they're a loony. So I think that the word prayer is okay. And I think that helped save my daughter. And so that was our decision on that. Anyways, thank you.
Thank you. I like to think of prayer in the way my Quaker ancestors did. Quakers don't say that they are praying for you. They say they will hold you in the light. And the thinking is, you don't ask God for specific things. You don't tell God what needs to be done. God knows. What you do is make sure that you are holding that person in God's view. Kind of an interesting spin on it. Thank you all for your comments and your questions. We'll close with words from the Reverend John Murray. You may possess a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and the everlasting love of God. Amen. And blessed be.